Thank you. Be seated.
I neglected to mention that Justice Gamage is on active duty with the United States Navy as part of his reserve obligations in Guam, judging cases. And he will take part in the deliberation and decision in all the cases this morning, but he's otherwise engaged at the moment. The court is now ready to hear arguments for petitioners, from petitioners in Smith versus Sewell.
May it please the court, Mr. Gary Kessler will present argument for petitioners.
May it please the court, the principal issue to be decided today in this case is whether or not an intoxicated patron may sue the server of alcohol as a first party under Section 202B2 of the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Code, otherwise known as the Dram Shop Act. The secondary issue is whether or not an appropriate plaintiff's conduct under that statute should be judged under comparative responsibility under Chapter 33 of the Texas Civil Practice and Remedies Code. The Court of Appeals, in its opinion, noted that the intended plaintiffs were not clearly delineated under the Dram Shop Act. However, it went on to hold that a first-party action existed. In finding a first-party action to exist, the Court of Appeals failed to follow basic tenets of statutory construction, both those set forth in the government code and those common law. The court improperly looked to determine whether or not the legislature had expressly excluded a first-party cause of action, rather than attempt to determine if one was created. On June 1st, 1987, at the time of the enactment of the Dram Shop Act, there was no first-party common law cause of action in Texas. Since there was not one in existence at the time, there would have been nothing for the legislature to exclude. So the proper inquiry for the Court of Appeals to have undertaken would be to determine whether or not the legislature expressly created such a recovery. In addition to applying the wrong standard, the Court of Appeals also failed to consider the entire statute in attempting to determine whether or not this claim existed. For instance, Section 2.03 of the Act is entitled Statutory Remedy. It speaks of the liability of providers under this chapter for the actions of their customers. If first party, or the drunks in this case, had been intended to have a cause of action under the statute, it would have said liability of providers for the actions of their customers and to their customers. Further, Section 2.02A of the Act is entitled Causes of Action. It states that essentially a third party's right to sue the intoxicated person under common law principles does not exclude the person bringing a cause of action against the person bringing the action under the Act. In other words, the person bringing the suit under 2.02A has to be a third party. If the person bringing the suit included a first party, 2.02A would be a meaningless act by the legislature because it would be reserving a right against the first party himself. If the statute were intended, Your Honors, to allow a suit against a first party, it would enable a first party to totally absolve himself of liability for the acts of his voluntary intoxication. For every third party case, there's going to be, if it's allowed under the statute, a potential first party case. And if the first party has a right under the statute, in addition to recovering that first party's own damage, the statute could be utilized as a vehicle for indemnity on the third party claim, thereby allowing the first party to totally shift responsibility from himself.
Counsel, before you move on, there's confusion in my mind, the impact of the age of Mr. Sewell at the time he was served his forfeitures of beer. what was the legal age, the legal drinking age at the time this he was served those 4 pitchers of beer?
At the time, Your Honor, the legal drinking age was 21. He was 20. The statute provides the exclusive cause of action against a provider for serving alcohol to persons 18 years or over. So he would be covered under the statute.
Could a provider of alcohol ever be liable for alcohol poisoning?
Under the under the express language of the statute, if the person was 18 years or older and was served, he could not be liable for alcohol poisoning.
Oh.
Or as a retailer, as a seller.
Or if he intentionally or negligently provided alcoholic beverages to a patron to the extent that he was noticeably drunk and could not take care of himself and allowed that person to leave the premises, there would be no liability for that.
To the first person. That's correct, Your Honor.
Why shouldn't there be a common law cause of action for alcohol poisoning?
If there was no statute, and we weren't dealing with an interpretation of whether or not the legislature created a first-party cause of action, there very well could be a common law cause of action, Judge, if against a provider. However, the legislature has entered the field and has said this statute provides the exclusive cause of action for serving alcoholic beverages to a person 18 years or older. If the person is less than 18, then the common law would be available.
If a dentist or another physician administered some sort of anesthetic to a person to the point that they were unable to navigate themselves and allowed that person to leave the premises, would the physician be responsible for injuries that the patient did to himself?
Absolutely, because I think that would be a common law cause of action in general principles of negligence. And we wouldn't be looking, Judge, at the statute and whether or not the statute is involved. In fact,
why would the legislature abolish a cause of action like that? If it were plain as that, if the answer really is absolutely that someone who administers a drug to the point that a person cannot take care of himself is liable for that, why would the legislature abolish an action like that?
Well, Your Honor, I don't think it's a question of looking at whether or not it was abolished, because it wasn't in existence at the time. On June 1st, that was 2 days before this court's opinion in El Chico, and even though El Chico was a third-party case and established a common law duty, a common law cause of action against providers, even if we were to look at it and say, okay, well, the Court of Appeals opinions in both those cases were on the books at that time. But again, those were third-party cases. At the time the legislature enacted this on June 1st, there was no common law cause of action available to a first party. In fact, even this court noted it in El Chico that historically the law, the common law, did not allow even an innocent third party to recover, and that's the facts that were in front of this court in El Chico. And interestingly, Judge Hecht, in El Faro, at footnote 9, the court noted that the issue for the court is not whether the legislature should have abolished forum nonconvenience. It's not whether the legislature should have abolished this particular cause of action, but whether it did in El Faro, and the question here, whether it did create the cause of action here. The 2.03 of the Act states that the Dram Shop Act does not impose obligations on a provider of alcoholic beverages other than those expressly stated in this chapter. The only express reference to a person bringing a suit is in 2.02A, and that, by definition, must be a third party. Again, 2.02A states, this chapter does not affect the right of any person to bring a common law cause of action against any individual whose consumption of an alcoholic beverage allegedly resulted in causing the person bringing the suit to suffer personal injury or property damage. The only express reference in this statute is to a cause of action provided to a third party. Now, the Court of Appeals looked at one portion of this statute, and all they looked at was 202.B, 202B1, where the language is, was obviously intoxicated to the extent that he presented a clear danger to himself and others. And the Court of Appeals said, well, that language shows some legislative expression of concern for a first party. Your Honor, I submit it's not necessary to go to legislative history to discern whether or not the legislature intended to create an express first-party cause of action, because it's clear in the statute that the only people referred to are third parties. But to interpret this particular language, it really is helpful to go back to the legislative history. On May 25th, 1987, Senator Glasgow, in speaking to the Senate Economic Development Committee, described the use of those terms, danger to himself and others. And he stated, what we need to decide is how you prove that. So Section 2 or 3 on page 3 sets up a burden of proof in the cause of action under this chapter upon proof that at the time the provision occurred, it was clearly apparent to the provider that the intoxicated, that the individual being served was being obviously intoxicated to the extent that we pick up that public intoxication language, a clear danger to himself and others. And 2 days later, on May 27th, before the full Senate, Senator Glasgow said, this bill sets forth the statutory dram shop law in Section 2. It sets forth the burden of proof. And it simply says, and he goes on to state the language, and he said, that clear danger, referring to a clear danger to himself and others, came out of the penal code, and that is the standard for public intoxication.
If it just said that he presented a clear danger to others, how would that affect the reading of the statute?
Well, Your Honor, I think it's immaterial. Whether he presented a clear danger to himself or a clear danger to others, because that language is not intended to define who is a plaintiff. It's an evidentiary standard to help the trier of fact. It's a known legal standard that the legislature was comfortable with dealing with on public intoxication. And it's clear from Senator Glasgow's remarks that that's what it was intended to do.
Isn't that equally consistent with a legislative recognition that who is injured is fortuitous? If you have a drunk driver, they may kill or injure themselves. They may kill or injure third parties. Why isn't that consistent with that concept?
Well, I believe, Your Honor, that it's inconsistent with that concept because I believe all that language has ever intended was to establish a standard. The standard was for provider, trier of fact, when is someone obviously intoxicated? Let's draw upon some known language in the law. Let's go to public intoxication. Let's just lift that standard out. It wasn't lifted out to help to delineate who was a proper plaintiff in the case. It was to aid the trier of fact in determining whether someone was obviously intoxicated at the time of provision.
That argument seems to cut against you. If it doesn't limit the class of plaintiffs, it would seem to include first-party plaintiffs.
Well, Your Honor, I don't know how it would. I'm having a little trouble seeing how it would preclude a first-party claim. I think to give it any more weight than an evidentiary standard is reading more into it than was intended by the legislature. I don't think it was intended to define, or as the Court of Appeals noted, express some legislative concern for a first party. The thing that the Court of Appeals did in this case was put Texas in a minority of jurisdictions that allow first party recoveries. Seven states, with the exception of our Court of Appeals, have been called upon to decide whether or not a statute allowed for the intoxicated person to bring suit. Alabama, Iowa, Michigan, Minnesota, New York, Oregon, and Vermont have all faced this issue and have all declined to allow a first-party recovery. 36 states have dram shop statutes. 27 have addressed first-party issues. Of those 27, 11 states deny it expressly on their face.
These seven states that have declined, do they have, is their statutory language comparable to ours?
For instance, Sager versus McClendon, which is an Oregon Supreme Court case in 1983, the statute read, no licensee or permittee is liable for damages incurred or caused by intoxicated patrons. Incurred by or caused by intoxicated patrons. Unless the person was visibly, the person being served was visibly intoxicated. Now, that language would seem to allow a first-party recovery. However, the Supreme Court of Oregon declined on policy reasons to allow a first-party or to contemplate that the legislature would have allowed it. And they quoted substantially from a dissent in their Court of Appeals, and they said, the cause of action created by the majority has far-reaching consequences. This is the Court of Appeals dissent that the Supreme Court picked up. It takes little imagination to anticipate the vast number of claims by persons who injure themselves while intoxicated. Pause, if you will, and contemplate the vast number of claims that may be urged by drunks if they were entitled to every expense and injury that are natural concomitants of intoxication. Surely the legislature did not intend them to be compensated under this statute.
Counsel, is it your contention that a provider of a seller of alcoholic beverages owes no duty to an individual who is obviously drunk not to continue to serve them alcohol?
They owe a duty that the legislature has said infers or confers a cause of action on a third party.
Well, irrespective of who can sue, is there a duty at all? Or is your argument there is no duty owed by a seller of alcohol to a person who is obviously intoxicated at all?
If the person who is obviously intoxicated is 18 years or older, the legislature has said whether there's a duty or not, there's not a cause of action. Now, there may be, at common law, a duty, but the legislature, in determining who can bring the claim, has carved out claims, first-party claims, against the provider if the intoxicated person is 18 years or older. And if that means that there's no duty, if the legislature has declared that there's no duty to that first party, then that's true, Your Honor.
Any other questions?
Thank you, counsel.
The court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
May it please the court, respondent will be represented by Mr. Jerome Ferguson.
May it please the court, just as a matter of, to elaborate a little bit on the background of this matter, we originally brought suit in this matter on three theories of negligence. I mean, on three theories of liability. The first was negligence, which was basically the breach of the common law duty. The second one was negligence per se, citing the criminal statute that prohibits sale of alcohol to minors. And the third was the statutory dram shop action. At the trial court...
Was there a violation here of the sale of alcohol to minors?
Yes, sir, there was. He served four pitchers of beer to my client that was 20 years of age at the time, at a time that they knew that this gentleman was under the legal drinking age, as established by the summary judgment proof, which must be taken as true from our standpoint.
Pitchers served to a table of more
no,
than
sir,
one
these,
person?
These four pitchers of beer were served to my client, who sat there and drank four pitchers of beer to the point that he was rip-roaring drunk. At the trial court level, Mr. Smith, the bar owner, moved for summary judgment originally on the negligence and the negligence per se theories of the case on the basis that my client's rights, that the only rights that my client had were under the statute, under the dram shop. That's on the exclusivity of the remedy sections in that.
Do you agree with that?
I agree with that if my client has a cause of action under the dram shop. I do not agree with that if this court should determine that dram shop is not applicable.
Why is the exclusivity any more or less applicable depending on whether your client has cause of action?
Because their basis for why they, if I may step over here, their basis that they are arguing that this does not apply to a first party cause of action is based upon this first sentence
of paragraph 2.03 that defines the statutory remedy, where it says the liability of providers under this chapter for the actions of their customers, members, or guests who are or become intoxicated is in lieu of common law or other statutory laws, warranties, and duties of the providers of alcoholic beverages. Okay. If you take their argument, their premise, to its conclusion, that this statute, that this language does not apply to first-party causes of action, then you are forced to the conclusion that the second part of that sentence where it says in lieu of common law or other statutory law, warranties, or duties of provider is also inapplicable to my client's situation. And that is why I come to that conclusion. What I'm saying is they can't have it both ways. They can't say that this statute provides my client a cause of action, the exclusive cause of action to my client, and then say the statute's inapplicable to my client on it.
The legislature, the cause of action is prescribed under 2.02 of that statute. Nowhere in 2.02 does it exclude a cause of action for the first party on this matter. Their basis for it is the first sentence of that 2.03 that I've cited, and also some public policy arguments. I believe...
What about the arguments? You're looking at this completely backwards. Instead of exclusion, you ought to be looking for creating a cause of action.
All right. Creation of the cause of action is under B, is under 2.02B, where it says the providing, selling, or serving of an alcoholic beverage may be made the basis of a statutory cause of action. That would seem to me to include within the ambit of it this first party cause of action on it. There is no language in there that specifically excludes it. The legislative history that we have cited to this court in our brief, moreover, would seem to support interpretation that the legislature was very concerned. Otherwise, you do end up with ridiculous results, such that you can go out and give an alcoholic poisoned by alcohol some kid at a fraternity, and there'd be no remedy for it.
Well, it's not ridiculous in this regard, and that is the legislature could have rationally thought to protect the innocent public from the actions of bars and drunks, but not the drunk himself if he chooses to sit there and drink four pitchers of beer.
But the kid, but why it would be, I believe would be, it's clearly not what the legislature intended, is because once that person becomes to the point that he is obviously intoxicated is the only time this statute kicks in. In order to trigger liability, there's got to be two things. The man's got to serve him when the person is obviously intoxicated, which necessarily means that his faculties are impaired. And second, that serving of that alcohol has to be the proximate cause of injuries to that person on it.
It would have been an easy thing for the legislature to have just said plainly, this contemplates first-party and third-party actions.
They certainly could have said that.
Why didn't they do that?
Because I think it would have been superfluous to the actions. It would seem to me that it was broad enough to be that the language that was used in 202B is broad enough to bring into it first-party causes of action, and that they saw no reason to exclude those causes of action. There, moreover, Your Honor, there's been no rush by the legislature to in any way restrict this to exclude first-party causes of action since its enactment. This is certainly the first time that this court's spoken on the issue under the Dram Shop, but it's not certainly the first time that the court's addressed first-party causes of action, either by this court or by the courts of appeal. Either approximately simultaneously with or subsequent to the enactment of the Dram Shop. Specifically, the El Chico case came out approximately simultaneously with the enactment of the Dram Shop. Two courts of appeal, subsequently in the Pastor and the Champas cases, both of which we cited to the court, adopted first-party causes of action on this matter. There'd been no rush to clarify that statute or to exclude something that's in there.
Do you agree that no common law cause of action for such first-party claims
had been recognized prior to the enactment of the statute.
That would be correct. There was about 2 days later, both of which were happening approximately simultaneously. I believe the El Chico case had been argued at that point.
Counsel, how do you respond to the petitioner's argument that 202B1 definition of obviously intoxicated to the extent he presented clear danger to himself and others was lifted from another statute as far as the definition of intoxication is concerned?
Well, it clearly was lifted from another statute.
You give no significance to that.
I don't give any significance to it, except that the legislature was obviously concerned on the impact that it may have to the person that was consuming that liquor at the time. I mean, I think clearly, if you read that particularly in conjunction with the legislative history that we've given you, it clearly shows that they were concerned about it. At least it shows that it was on their mind. And if they had chosen to exclude it, I would think that they would have done it by express wording of the statute. I don't think they did that in this case. All right.
What about the landowner's liability?
Your Honor, we received a clarification from the court, or I received a letter from Ms. Littlefield that says y'all did not care for arguing on that issue.
And you stand on your brief on in that regard?
Yes, sir. They have made a large point about somehow that this court, for public policy reasons, should choose to read this statute very narrowly and to exclude that first party cause of action. I would submit to you that the public policy of this state has been exactly the opposite of that. For specifically, when the El Chico case was recognized, the court clearly recognized that duty. But more importantly, since 1884, in the case that we've given you, the courts of the state have consistently held that the statutes that prohibit the sale of liquor to minors are clearly designed to protect the minor from themselves. That the consuming minor is clearly within the class of persons that is thought to be protected by that act on that matter. So for the reasons that we believe that 2.02b prescribes a cause of action, that the first sentence of the paragraph 2.03 does not exclude our clients from prosecuting an action, and two, if it does, then our negligence and negligence per se theories are back in the case, that the legislative history supports the inclusion of the first party cause of action, and that the common law of this state, as well as the statutory cause of law of this state, would seem to indicate a public policy for this first party cause of action and to prohibit this sale of liquor in these quantities to first parties. We believe that the construction of the statute is properly that the first party does have a cause of action.
What's the
attorney?
In your opinion, is the reason for the last sentence of 2.03, is that because there are additional criminal penalties to selling liquor to someone under 18? Is that the only reason for that? Or is there some, does that have some significance in the civil law as well?
Oh, I think it was intended to be the exclusive remedy under the civil law. Okay, for the person.
Well, what if your client had been 17 instead of 18?
If my client was 17, that statute would be inapplicable, and you would be straight back to the Pastor Machampas decision of common law.
So it's your position that what difference does it? All right, what difference does the common law action and the remedy under this statute? I mean, what would be the practical difference to you, in your opinion, if your client were 17?
Oh, if my client was 17, mm-hmm. My client would essentially be with his typical proof of a negligence and a negligence per se violations.
But you claim that anyway under this statute, so what's the difference?
No, I claim
When I started out, I said we sought judgment on three theories. One was negligence. One was negligence per se, and the third was a statutory cause of action.
There's still no difference.
But I'm sorry, I'm not following you.
Causes of action are all the same, aren't they?
No, there's some difference. On the negligence, you're dealing with a reasonable standard. On the statutory cause of action, you're dealing with a much higher standard burden of proof. To get to him under the statute, you have to show, for instance, not merely that he sold liquor to a minor, okay, as you would with somebody under 18, you have to show that he continued to serve him at the time that he was obviously intoxicated. Okay, if this gentleman had appeared sober, for instance, and under this statute, and had purchased four pitchers of beer and had walked outside with them at a time, there would be no liability under the way that that statute is written, because you have to prove the first element of the cause of action.
At the time that this statute was enacted, what was the legal drinking age?
It was 21. I think it had just made the shift from 18 to 21 at that point in time. The other section of our argument deals basically with the Comparative Responsibility Act. The Comparative our fault with the Court of Appeals decision on the Comparative Responsibility is essentially that the issue was not briefed or argued in the Court of Appeals until the motion for rehearing. It is our position that if you are left with the conclusion that there is a statutory cause of action, that somehow then this statutory cause of action must necessarily prescribe within its own limits the defenses that are applicable to that statute. There is no such defense that was made under the Dram Shop Act as it exists. And that's very simple, because if you're continuing to pour liquor into someone that is obviously intoxicated, it's obvious that he can't make that decision for himself to quit drinking. And so the legislature, it seems to me, put the burden on the man that's serving liquor for profit to make the man stop, or to at least stop serving him then. There. But the question is, though, is whether or not the Comparative Responsibility Act applies. By its terms, under the Comparative Responsibility Act, it applies to actions for negligence, which is clearly a statutory cause of action, products liability, or strict tort liability. Neither one of those is applicable here. So therefore, it's a simple situation that the Comparative Responsibility Act, by its own terms, does not apply to the statutory cause of action. There is no provision under the Dram Shop that incorporates Comparative Responsibility under it. And if you think about it, that because of the fairly horrendous requirements that a plaintiff has to meet to recover under the Dram Shop, that's really not such a bad result. Because, and the point that I make is, for us to prove liability, it's more than we have to prove that he served enough liquor to somebody so that they could go out and get drunk. We have to prove that the man continued to serve liquor to him when he was obviously intoxicated. And when he's obviously intoxicated, he's the only one that's left with his full faculties, supposedly, is the tavern owner or the bar operator.
And the drunk's complicity in achieving that state of intoxication should not be considered for any purpose.
It may be considered for a criminal purpose. It is not applicable for civil purposes under the statute.
How did you establish there were four pitchers of beer?
By my client's affidavit.
How does he know? He was drunk.
My client was rip-roaring, right, Your Honor.
Well, why does he know if it was four or ten?
He remembers four pitchers of beer.
Oh, he remembers four.
He does remember four pitchers of beer.
Could have very easily been one.
No, sir. According to his affidavit, which in this case has to be taken as true, it was four.
You made
for summary judgment purposes now. I understand the argument, the cross-examination argument, but nevertheless, for correct before us, the four pitchers need to be taken as true.
Counsel, you made the statement that the owner poured the liquor into him. You don't really mean that, do you?
No, I don't mean that literally, Your Honor. I mean when he
put four pitchers of beer out there and continue to serve this.
When they put the four pitchers of beer, did he ask for the four pitchers of beer?
I'm sure he paid for them. That's right.
Any other questions?
Other than that, I'll give you some time back.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much.
Chief Justice Phillips assisted me, Judge Cornyn, in being all responsive. I think you have to look at this statute in the totality of the Alcoholic Beverage Code to put it in a proper perspective. To answer your question specifically about duty, the legislature, in denying a first party the right to recover damages against the provider under Section 2 of the Dram Shop Act, didn't absolve the bar owner of a duty. That's reserved in criminal sanctions. That's reserved in statutory revocation proceedings. So the duty's still there. We're just talking about a remedy under this particular portion of the code. The legislature, when it enacted 2.03, and it made this cause of action exclusive to persons 18 years or older, knew what the legal drinking age was, that it was 21. And I think it made a decision at that point that this statute was going to apply if the person being served the alcoholic beverage was 18 years, 19 years, 20 years, 21 years. In the legislature sense, a minor was 18 years or younger. And if the court looks at the legislative history of the drinking age statute, there's reference in there to the only reason that it went to 21 was so that the state of Texas wouldn't lose highway funds because of the federal legislation. And if the Attorney General or a federal court of appeals or the United States Supreme Court had declared that regulation invalid, that the age would automatically revert back to 18. So I think when you deal with the minor, in the sense of our legislature, 18 years or younger than 18 years is what they would consider for purposes of this. Now, interestingly, counsel points out or argues that he wants a first-party cause of action, and he doesn't feel that the comparative responsibility statute should apply. Well, in the context of even a third-party action, should the comparative responsibility statute apply? I think the legislature, in enacting Chapter 33 of the Civil Products and Civil Practice and Remedies Code, sets forth in 33.001A and C bars against plaintiff's recoveries and negligence actions. In 33.001B, there's a bar in strict products liability actions, in warranty actions, and then a third category, strict tort liability actions.
That's this is statutory action. That is correct, statutory action.
Well, it does in 33.0014, where the legislature defines percentage of responsibility for purposes of applying 33.001, and it states that percentage attributed to each claimant, each defendant, each settling party with respect to causing or contributing the cause in any way, whether by negligence, by any defective or unreasonably dangerous product, that strict products liability, 402A kind of lawsuit, and then by any other conduct or activity violative of the applicable legal standard, the personal injury or property. So the applicable legal standard in this case would be the Statutory Dram Shop Act.
Counsel, if Mr. Ferguson is correct and Mr. Sewell's negligence in becoming intoxicated under these circumstances could not be considered under this statute, is that a consideration that the court ought to take into account in determining whether a first-party cause of action was sought to be created by this statute, which would allow for an intoxicated person to go in, become drunk, and then not be legally accountable for their response for their activities?
I agree, Your Honor, absolutely. I mean, if the argument is that the legislature in Chapter 33 of the Civil Practice and Remedies Code, which is the same legislature that passed this Dram Shop Act, didn't intend for the intoxicated person's conduct to be judged, I think it's evidence of the fact that they didn't intend for that same person to even have a cause of action. Certainly. I believe, Your Honor, that this court, in dealing with, in the El Chico case, in footnote 2, made a reference to 19 states that had adopted specific dram shop statutes. And at the bottom of that footnote, you reference, this court references that dram shop actions are in the nature of strict liability actions. And you cite the Illinois dram shop statute. They are in the nature of strict liability actions. They're not negligence actions. And to exclude, if there is a third party, there clearly is a third party cause of action. We don't believe there's a first party cause of action. But for purposes of third party causes of action, to exclude the statutory strict tort liability from 33.001B would be to... would be not in compliance with the statute.
Any other questions? Thank you. The court will take another brief recess.
The audience will please rise.